No Direction Beyond, the Starfinder News, Reviews, and Interview Podcast. I'm your host, Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Parham, joined by my co-host,
Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
And
I'm James. I write Code Switch.
And we have a very special guest. Thurston Hillman from Paizo is here to talk about Starfinder Society, a subject of frequent discussion here on the show. Thirsty, how are you doing?
Not bad. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Now, for those of you who in the audience who may or may not know who Thirsty is, so Thirsty, why don't you tell us who you are and what you do for Starfinder?
Sure. Hi, I'm Thurston Hillman, a.k.a. Thirsty to a lot of people. I am the Starfinder Society developer for Paizo. So I am the person who goes through and develops all of the Starfinder Society scenarios that you have played or hopefully played. And I've been doing that since about February of last year when I got brought on board to get ready for the Starfinder launch.
Now, what does a developer do? Like...
No, for sure. So generally speaking, I take scenarios once they are handed in and submitted from freelance authors, and I do all the necessary treatment and work on them to make sure that they fit with our world, fit with our canon, that the rules work fine. It's a very interesting process when you basically have a whole new game that no one's ever developed for yet. So that's sort of my role. I also do a lot of work on top of the standard development role that caters to the organized play. So I'm responsible for all the additional resources, sanctioning, any of the organized play-specific stuff that is required for Starfinder Society. I do that with a team of other people, including my boss, John Compton, the organized play manager, Tanya Wooldridge, and the Pathfinder Society developer, Linda Zayas Palmer. We kind of form our Voltron together to get all this stuff out. But my area of expertise is more on the Starfinder side.
Wow, so you do the additional resources too, Thirsty?
Yeah.
Does that mean we have you to thank for the glory that is book three of Dead Sons being sanctioned before it's even published yet? Because that's amazing.
Yeah.
That is one of my big pushes when I came on board. One of the benefits to having a new campaign is you can tend to stay on top of stuff a lot easier. Because there's not this giant backlog that you constantly have to go back and fight with. That's why with Adventure Paths, I have been a huge proponent of making sure we are on top of it. And in a lot of cases, this stuff is done well in advance, and sometimes there's just challenges of getting it on the website, or we notice something last minute and we want to make sure it gets changed before it goes live. But yeah, for Adventure 3, that was sort of a push I had. Totally not because I have an article in Adventure 3. No, that's crazy talk.
No, but I mean, it was really cool to just see all those things updated, along with the updates to ship combat DCs. That was pretty neat too.
And a lot, like, that side of things really came from Owen Casey Stevens. One of the things when, before Starfinder Society had launched and we had any scenarios in the can, one of the things I worked on pretty heavily was kind of grabbing Owen, grabbing John, grabbing Eric Mona, sitting down and discussing, okay, FAQs and erratas, like, very important. We should be on the ball with these with the new game. We want to make sure that people know that, you know, Starfinder is something that's going to be around for a while, and we're putting in the support for it.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, with all the work you've done, it definitely feels like that.
Now, I imagine that there might be some members of our audience, especially since No Direction Beyond is a relatively new podcast on the network, who don't know what the Starfinder Society is. Can you go ahead and give us like the sales pitch for the organized play?
Absolutely. So the organized play program that Paizo offers encompasses right now three games. You have Pathfinder Society, the Adventure Card Guild, and Starfinder Society. And what the general idea for the role-playing guild side, which is Starfinder Society and Pathfinder Society, is that you can go down to a gaming store, a convention, anywhere that offers either game, and bring a character, and play. And as long as you're following the organized play rules that are, at least for the Starfinder side, very similar to the core rules, and same for the Pathfinder side, really. But for Starfinder, very much just almost straight out of the book rules with a couple modifications here and there. You can bring your character, play at the store. If you're someone who travels a lot and it's hard to get like a consistent gaming group, you can go online, search, see what events are going on at a store, show up, play. And as well as conventions. That's a real big one for people who like going to Gen Con, Origins, PaizoCon, all those big events for gaming. You can show up with a character that is consistent, and it's not like you're showing up at, I made this fourth level character who found a +5 Vorpal sword, I swear. It has some consistent rules to make sure that that sort of stuff doesn't happen. And so we're a worldwide network with different lodges and regions, yeah, across the world, all of which are running games on daily basis at this point.
So what module has the +5 Vorpal Bazooka? Just asking for a friend.
That would be metagaming, sir, and we do not support that.
No!
Okay. I mean, that example sounded super specific. Has that ever happened to you in a game where someone's tried to come with like a crazy overpowered weapon?
No, I mean, one of my earliest gaming experiences is I remember going to a convention where they were offering role-playing game slots, and I'm like, how do build a character? Like, can I have any equipment? Because at that point, like, this was second edition D&D. There weren't too many organized play events going on at most conventions, so it was kind of, well, we trust you, and trust is a terrible thing.
Oh, it's sad.
You mentioned that it was difficult to develop adventures for a game that wasn't even out yet. Now, Starfinder came in hot, and organized play launched at day one, technically 2 hours before Starfinder released. What was that like?
It was an experience. I mean, I remember back, because like I said, I was hired in about February, and because of how things sort of shook out, we weren't getting scenarios in for me to look at and work on until sometime after PaizoCon. So I was at PaizoCon enjoying this great life high, and then Sunday, I woke up and I was, you know, I was a bit tired from a night of revelries beforehand, and someone came up to me and was like, congratulations, and like, thanks, like, must be about the new job. And then I kept getting a string of people throughout the day who were doing that. I'm like, oh, congratulations. Like, okay, why are people congratulating? Oh, because we put, like, the Gen Con ticket sales for Starfinder went live and they sold out in like 5 minutes. And then my face went completely white and I realized, oh, don't mess this up, Thirsty. So that was very interesting. As for the development process itself, it, you know, for Gen Con, it was crazy because we were developing 5 different products for Gen Con, was our initial slated release, which, when you think about it, an adventure path in, like, Pathfinder line, you know, tends to go in the 30,000-word mm-hmm. mark. So we were producing more than an adventure path because society scenario is about 10,000 words. So we were almost producing 2 adventure paths worth of material, and that was my first, like, all right, have fun. But, I mean, I got to work with John Compton really closely on that, and him and I kind of, you know, back and forth a lot of the scenarios. I would do an initial dev pass it on to him. He would do sort of a spot check, tell me where I messed up, try to learn, do better on the next one, and we repeated that process 5 times. So it was a very interesting but also very scary and enlightening process.
So besides the Caligula-esque fight for seats at Gen Con, how has the society been received so far?
Well, I will say that it has gone far beyond expectations at almost every level. I think that just the sheer ravenous demand for Starfinder has been insane to see. Post Gen Con, I attended 2 events, one that was kind of small and local here in Winnipeg, but we had some people from the Twin Cities come up, and then another one where I'd actually gone down to the Twin Cities, and they had people from all over central U.S. and beyond. And at both of those events, it was very much a, so when are we getting more content? We have now had people who have run things six times. When are we getting more content? When are we getting... And, like, my private message box on paizo.com, my email box, all exploding with when are we getting more content, which is really good to hear and also slightly, again, terrifying. But the reception's been really good to that. I think we've also had a lot of good reception to some of our just community interactions that we've had. Again, coming in on ground level, we're able to do a lot of things differently than what Pathfinder Society can feasibly get away with their workload. So that has been really helpful, and we've got a lot of positive feedback on that.
Well, that kind of leads... go for it, Alex.
Yeah, I was going to make that same comment. Like, that almost sounds like you have big news about the that you want to share that has to do something maybe with content.
Yeah, thirsty. When are we getting new content?
When are you getting new content? Well, how about if I told you in starting in March, mm-hmm. we will be going to two scenarios a month.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we will be starting that process up in March, which I should open up some of my super duper secret documents to make sure I'm giving you all the information correctly. But yeah, in March is what we are currently looking at.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, because even at my location, which is a relatively rural location, though we have about 30 people for a town of 5,000. So
bad.
So like, we have been sort of having to with our Pathfinder players, it's just like, hey, come play what you want. With our Starfinder people, we were like, okay, we need to strictly schedule this. You're going to get one chance at this. Don't let your character die, because if he dies, I don't know how he's going to catch back up with the rest of the crew, and so and so forth. So just being able to just like let the belt out a little is going to be great.
And that seems to be a very, very common comment we've seen.
With your character.
And Alex is in the speed zone.
Right in now, the speed so. Force right now. Yeah. Okay.
He's in the drift.
No, it's been, yeah, something that people have been asking for since day -20. And we just needed to make sure that the demand was there. And I remember we have our weekly meetings in which I am on an iPad in the Phantom Zone like this. And I remember in one of those meetings for organized play, we had Eric Mona, and Eric was like, all right, so Starfinder's doing really well. What do you guys think we should do to ramp up? And John Compton and I, sitting beside each other, kind of share the sidelong glance, look at him and go, two scenarios a month, please, please get all these people off our backs, please. Most people look at me like, you want more work, Thirsty? But yeah, I'm A-okay with that. So that will be in March, which will be interesting as well, because it's going to be a month that also debuts another like 1-4 sort of standard scenario. We've had a lot of faction missions, just because we wanted to make sure we were hitting the factions fairly regularly. And in a spoiler alert, in a one scenario a month situation, getting multiple factions is actually really tough to balance between having faction scenarios and non-faction scenarios. So this is one of those other benefits of having two scenarios a month.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't felt too onerous, like, oh, this scenario has this faction, because they seem to logically at least be there. It's not like a faction's jammed into a mission just to feature them.
No, and that's something we're really trying to do, and how we're sort of differentiating our factions is we're also trying to create a sense of, like, each of our factions in Starfinder Society has their own definitive story that we're trying to tell.
And speaking of the factions, in Pathfinder Society, I definitely noticed there's some clumps in a lot of groups I play with. Like, certain mm-hmm. factions are more popular than other factions, and we used to have a pretty good gauge on that, and a really great gauge when you guys started killing them off. I'm not noticing that with the Starfinder Society. You're down to five factions. How are the factions going over? How do you think they're going over?
Generally, we've had a lot of really positive feedback about the fact that people aren't locked into a single faction, that they can sort of move around and pick up those champion boons and, oh, I want to do a whole bunch of data file stuff and maybe pick up a little bit of second seekers. That's gone over really well. One of our goals with factions that we think we hit the mark on was we didn't want a faction that was, this is the paladin faction. If you are a paladin, go here. This is the rogue faction. If you're sneaky, go here. We really tried our best to avoid those kind of tropes specifically, just because we didn't want people to feel that we're shoehorned into a faction because of a class choice. And I mean, obviously, some character themes and classes generally gravitate more to some of the factions, but, you know, a good example is like hacker operative data files make sense, but someone who's making a burly soldier, there's still a reason to be in the data files. And so that has gone over very well. And a lot of our story scenarios, especially right now, like the, for scenarios we have out the Wayfinders, the Data Files, the Exo Guardians, December sees the, oh sorry, the Exo Guardians, the Wayfinders, and the Acquisitives. December sees the release of our first Data Files mission. I'm really excited for that. But overall, the faction missions we've released so far, we've had a lot of good response to, because it seems people are getting the impression of, oh, this is building up the lore for the factions.
Which is your favorite venture captain?
Oh, this is a tough one. because there aren't many of them.
Faction leaders. I'm sorry.
Oh, faction leaders. Okay.
Sorry, I kind of view as one of the same. My fault.
Oh, God. That's like asking me to pick a favorite child.
Which most parents can easily do.
That's fair. That's
when you have five, it's easy.
We've had a lot of people who have really gravitated to Zigvigix or Ziggy. I mean, Ziggy's pretty cool. Pretty cool. But I kind of like Ratazam a lot. That, like, cool. And we have some stuff planned for the Acquisitives, especially Ratazam, that are going to be really good. I mean, going back to the venture captain question, we only have two of those, but we are working on introducing some new ones. I have some favorites that are currently unannounced. In fact, I just was writing a document today that was introducing some of them into canon, potentially. And there's some good stuff coming.
This is a good time to remind everybody that No Direction Beyond is filmed in front of a live Twitch audience. If you want to ask questions to us or our guests or any of our topics, go on to our Twitch chat and ask us. We'll be collecting the questions throughout the episode and feeding them to our guest. This is your chance to get your answers. Don't waste it.
So here's a weird question for you, Thirsty. Obviously, the lore of the Starfinder Society is that they kind of rediscovered the Pathfinder Society and based a lot of their hierarchies on it. So when it came time to decide how the Starfinder Society was different, what kind of things did you and John look for changing, like bringing this into the future?
Oh, boy. So this is one of those very interesting things that was a lot of meetings. And first off, I want to say that, well, John and I did a lot of legwork on this. There were a bunch of other people involved. I mean, Tanya was involved because we wanted to make sure whatever decisions we made would jive with the real world organization as well. We also had, I mean, from the start, when James Sutter was around as creative director, he and even now, Rob, who has taken over that position, have been really good on, you know, reviewing our outlines, making sure. So at the beginning, Sutter was very much in our meetings about deciding how the society would function. And then Eric Mona was also a huge part of that. He sat in on several of our meetings to discuss, you know, leadership changes and how we wanted to do it. But what was important for us was, speaking from, like, personal experience, the sort of masked overlords of the society doesn't really engender a lot of loyalty. And so that was something we wanted to really change up in Starfinder Society, and have we've seen a lot of success with when you know who an NPC is, you can connect with that NPC, whether you love them or hate them. I mean, Grandmaster Torch, everyone has an opinion, right? So we wanted to make sure that we were able to give these characters, you know, some definition, but we also didn't want the, you know, Starfinder Society goes for the next 100 years. 100 years, Starfinder Society. Starfinder Society for 100 years. When we do that, we don't want it to be the same person in charge or like group of two or three people in charge. This is a living campaign, and one thing we want to do is make sure that it feels like a living campaign. So that's sort of where the idea for the first Seeker came from, which was this idea of this person who sort of has a maybe like 1 to 3 year, I choose the course of the society and we follow that course. It kind of worked in with how like the Grand Lodge works in Pathfinder Society, where we are the defined mission. Like, we are Pathfinders that are all about the society and nothing else. Well, the Second Seekers are about that too, but with how we've done seasons and sort of those storylines for seasons, it felt important that like, it's not just like, okay, we're going this way, and then this season we're going a completely different direction, and that faction sort of gets a bit zigzaggy. With the first Seeker and having that idea of the temporary faction associated with them, that let us do a lot of cool things. It also let us include more faction missions for that faction in a season, with players understanding that after that season, that faction may no longer exist. The supporting elements that went in the leadership of the society, like guidance. Guidance was a James Sutter idea in the initial outline that we sort of really liked and have played around with. And then the forum, which in a lot of ways represents some elevation that we can do with any of our NPCs. We can reward people with positions on the forum without them being the first Seeker. But overall, I think the biggest goal we've had in mind with leadership is with that first Seeker role, and the idea that, oh man, one day that could be a player. And that has been something we have wanted to make sure is a potential from day zero. I remember being in a meeting with Eric and James and John, and John and I were trying to explain the idea that, yeah, like maybe one day we could really get to a point where a player in the community, through various trials and tribulations and such, could elevate to that role. And as long as it's not a ridiculous concept, that could help steer where we go in future seasons. So, yeah.
Now, what do you think it's going to take for a player to become First Seeker? Like, what should our potential First Seekers listening right now keep in mind?
There's a lot of elements to that, and I mean, we haven't even locked it all in yet. One thing that we have discussed is, and you'll notice this in most of our scenarios, is the idea that we've included a lot of breadcrumbs, story breadcrumbs, that aren't necessarily related to the main plot. Little, like, side pieces of information that people can cling on to. And the idea that we're going to keep doing this, and that when it comes time, however our potential First Seekers become a First Seeker, the idea that you could start a campaign, much like a political campaign, on, remember that thread from scenario 1-X, 1-Y, and 1-Q? That's the thread my campaign is about. And so there's somewhat of a reward to players who kind of catch on to those themes and really pay attention to the story, because that having that knowledge and being able to give that sales pitch down the line could certainly lead into, like, man, the Star Bacon system is under attack. We should go there and help the Star Bacon people. I mean,
Can we help them with ranch dressing?
Oh, that's weird, but okay.
I don't know how it's going to help them. Are they, like, suffering from the shortages? Like, their salads are dry? I don't know what we're saving them from.
Okay, so we've got one of our first questions from chat. This is from Roll for Combat, who is asking, when are we going to see the Starfinder adventure centered around Zoe's reality show?
Tentatively speaking, next month in January.
Ooh. That's a fun answer.
That is... The current plan is that John Compton is going to be writing that sucker. Because John Compton and I entered into a terrible, terrible death pact where he was writing a Starfinder Society scenario and I'm writing a Pathfinder Society scenario. So, currently, as per the schedule, barring weird things that can certainly happen in the industry, that's on the docket for next month in January.
Now, even more so than the groups putting together the AP, you're having to come up with more varied adventures and concepts for the Starfinder game. And so in a lot of ways, you're pioneering what it means to play a Starfinder adventure. So what are you finding that has worked and what doesn't work?
It's very interesting that you bring this up. I was recently at the Paizo Christmas party. I went down to Seattle for some pleasure and some much behind freelance work, and just hanging out with friends there. And at the party, I was hanging out with Rob McCurry, the creative director, who sort of patted me on the shoulder, you know, we're good friends, and was, you know, we're talking about work stuff. And he's like, well, you've certainly put out more content than even the main Starfinder team has right now, which is, again, terrifying. But I think a lot of the success we've had in sort of what goes into planning is a lot of, gosh, this will sound terrible, but a lot of pressing the random button on TV tropes and sort of being like, what work? And not to say that we're like, we have a dartboard of things to do, but there is a certain amount of like, oh, we need a scenario that is a haunted spaceship and is a bug hunt. That has to be a thing. We need a scenario that is essentially a Shadowrun scenario. There are so many of these elements that we have that we want to touch on, especially those things that you just can't do in Pathfinder, because having like a science fantasy setting really opens up like reality TV is a perfect example of that. That was in our initial pitch, was, yeah, we have to have a reality TV, like that, no question. That's happening. So a lot of that just comes down to sort of like in, consuming media and figuring out what works, what doesn't work, and sort of pitching some of those scenario ideas that way, while also working them into our greater storyline.
There's been a couple good ones. I mean, some of them have choices that feel very far-reaching at the end. Very far-reaching.
I will assume that scenario 1-03 is high on that list.
It's a prime number.
Oh, But yeah, it's, and that's what we want. Like one of the other cool things about starting a campaign like this is we can really put those reporting notes to use. And even in scenarios where we don't have reporting notes, there's still a certain amount of like fan interaction.
Yeah, I always like those boxes where it's like, check off if somebody survived an encounter, because that it leads up to, hey, here's a recurring villain, and not like, oh, it's that bad guy we heard of once. Oh, we punched him real good.
And there is a certain amount of, I guess, like, verisimilitude problems that can arise from that, where if, like, one group murdered that NPC, and then that NPC shows up later, there can be a bit of, like, that can be jarring to some groups, but at the same point, I think a lot of our players recognize that if the vast majority of people go one route and that's sort of what the campaign decides, there's a very cool element to that because that's a consistent story. That recently came up in an outline that I have been bouncing back and forth with one of our freelancers for an as of yet unannounced scenario, but there is an NPC who has shown up in one of our scenarios who is now back. And yeah.
I'm excited.
Okay, so one of the is it hard to avoid the temptation to just basically make the deflector dish a solution, or to go into the technobabble solution for your adventures?
It's not technobabble. All the technology is very well defined. No, it's the magic babble because we're science fantasy still, so a wizard can still do it. And for a lot of what we do, I mean, there's certainly some element of that. But also the system like, just Starfinder itself lends itself really well to, I don't want to say GM / story fiat, but I'm going to say GM story fiat, because even the rules are designed in such a way that, you know, magic item design is not as meticulous. You can create something new and cool and not get caught in minutiae of, like, what spell compared to these creation rules and monster creation. It's really, really funny because Miko's scenario from last month, Knight and Night Arch, there were some complaints online from people going, well, one of the NPCs that you fight is just a class and nothing special. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool that's feedback, because Starfinder lends itself so well to, oh, I can make a monster in like 5 minutes and apply a bunch of special unique rules to that monster, and it's entirely new and different. Mm-hmm. And so we get a lot of feedback like that now, where it's like, man, we really like how there can be those sort of storyline driven elements. December scenario has something similar, where there is a creature that shows up that is very much a variant creature, and the comment was made from John during his development pass, well, why don't you just use the base creature? Well, because it's easy to make a variant and it's more thematic. Oh yeah, that's true. So there's some really like fun things we can do with that.
So along those same lines, then, what would you say your favorite change going from writing Pathfinder scenarios to Starfinder scenarios, and how you think about designing them?
Oh, I will kind of lean on a crutch here and certainly say the creature creation system is just. It is very interesting too. It's something that people seem to have the hardest time grasping as a new concept, especially as I deal with more and more freelancers. I certainly get a sense of, like, give me these CR encounters, and then the freelancer will come back with, well, like, I'll have to use this monster, and, like, no, you can make whatever you want. You can have the 8-headed rhinoceros monster and build it using these great tables. That has been probably just the neatest thing from a design perspective.
Would you publish an 8-headed rhinoceros monster?
No, it would probably be like the animate shield of a bigger monster that has 8 rhinoceros heads coming out of it.
Oh, yeah, that's so cool.
I was just now being like a starfish shape of just like on all directions is a rhino head.
What a horrible creature. We need to find that and kill that right now.
There's a boss like that in Dark Souls somewhere. It's fine. Oh. Demon yeah. Souls, sorry.
Well, speaking of terrible body horror, Bard23 asks, where's my Skittermanders?
Oh, yes, yeah, Skitterman. We might talk. We got, what, another 60 or so minutes?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh yeah, we'll talk about Skittermanders later in the episode. I think people who want to get the potential to win a playable Skittermander for Starfinder or a Goron for Pathfinder Society will have that opportunity later in the show. So stay listening.
Hear that, listeners? Listen through the whole show. But speaking of races, one of the new recent news announcements is this region system to sort of introduce the races from Alien Archive. What's this about? Mm-hmm.
So if we were going in order of like pester at thirsty at conventions, right after two scenarios a month, like right after, would be when are we getting more playable races? When are we getting more playable races? Can we have all the playable races? And to a degree, I mean, Starfinder Society, we want it to be the Cantina feel campaign. We want you to come into Starfinder Society and really like have this crazy variety of races. But races serve an important purpose in organized play in how they can entice people to show up to events. There's a lot of prestige around having unique races. So we wanted to make sure that we delivered those in a manner that would be both fair, and also because we're just starting the campaign and people seem to forget we're only a couple months into the campaign, we also want to give time for our core races to really shine. So that's part of the reason why we sort of held back legacy races, because people have played half-orcs and gnomes for a long time. We wanted to give at least, you know, a couple months where play these new races, get a sense of them. But now we're sort of opening those gates a bit more, and with Alien Archive, it presented us with a whole bunch of new races, which is great. But we needed a way to properly disseminate those. And so what we came up with was the idea of what we are calling mega regions, which is bundled together regions of the world where if you have a convention for Starfinder, you can show up and one of the rewards will be a set of two different races that are associated with that region. But fear not, we are going to routinely rotate those. And the idea being is that those races will eventually become available to every region. The only exception to that being our kind of special region, which is online, which the online region is getting access to two of the playable races from Dead Sons number 2. And they will not rotate out. They will stick with those races. And that's because, I mean, you don't want to have them as part of the rotation to detract from convention play, because you get all those people who are like, well, why would I go to this convention when I can just log in online and play this game? So we felt that was a fair middle ground.
So what are these regions? Like, where and when should our listeners that are participating in conventions expect this to go into effect?
Well, we have the boons ready now. This part of the thing is really more Tanya's side of the organizing. But we have our four mega regions right now, which are like region one is Africa and East Eurasia and Asia Pacific. Two is Central Europe, Northwest, Southeast of North America. Mega region three is our Western Europe, the Middle East, and then the Northeast and the Southwest. And then the mega region four is the Midwest and the Great Lakes. And then I cannot say like what state or province is in which of those without referring to the document. But each of those is getting their own sort of batch. And we separated it out so that generally speaking, two adjacent regions aren't getting the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so that can help promote travel. It can help promote a lot of things. But those will be going into effect, I want to say, almost immediately, and that we'll be rotating them on roughly a 3-month timetable.
You hear that? And, sorry.
No, good.
You hear that, people? Get to some conventions right now!
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. There's also a Wayfinders boon that you can get extra, reputation if you play in a different region,
yep.
Which is pretty neat, so makes me want to play outside my region.
Yeah, and that was something we wanted to come up with and was sort of a late night at 3 a.m. PaizoCon, John and I in a room, me drinking, John talking, idea that came up, which was these meta boons and the idea that we can promote some different styles of play via factions and take some things that are common outside of the table and encourage them, because that's sort of what we want. That's why the data files have their online play.
I think it's good ways to mechanically reinforce, new or good behaviors.
Yeah.
So here's a question. If online is its own region, if I play a game online since I don't live on the internet, do I get extra reputation for the acquisitives?
For the Wayfinders? No.
Wayfinders.
Yeah, that will be okay. Something we will be rattling up in the next version of the guide, because at the time the guide was printed, online wasn't its own region, and now it is, so that is a change. But we want to make sure, again, that online sort of has their special status, because we don't want to make people feel like, well, why would I go to a convention when I can get this stuff online? Mm-hmm. I can sit in my home and not wear pants and play an event. Well, that's not what we're going for. But also, online is a region that does a lot and has a lot of games, so we want to make sure that they get something mm-hmm. cool, too.
No, that makes sense, because if online was its own region for the Wayfarers, then that would be double dipping with the data files, right? Because
exactly.
You get more with both. That's just not cool. All
right. So we have a question, and this is from, again, Roll for Combat asks, are there any Galarian PFS characters, families, clans, dynasties that might show up in future Starfinder scenarios?
I think that's a very veiled way of asking, can we see Black Rose in the future?
I thought this might be referring to the
shirt. What is he doing?
Oh my god! For those of you who are on the audio podcast, Thirsty just Supermaned his hoodie to reveal Drendel Drang's head in a jar.
Wow. We'll do it again. It's for the fans.
Is that show like on sale or?
No, that was a special do up by Lucas Video for Gen Con.
Lucas Video is John a
Compton, I believe, shook his head and refused his shirt, but I wear mine with pride.
You're just crying, Drendel Drang. That's a great shirt.
And I know Lucas is watching or listening right now. So excellent.
To answer the question in a more serious light, one of the things that we really are trying to do is make Starfinder Society its own thing. There is certainly the temptation of, like, Blake Rose Space Museum. I mean, as one of the people who is pretty responsible for, you know, a lot of Blake Rose stuff that's shown up in Pathfinder Society, the temptation is there. But I feel it sort of cheapens the experience to a degree if we dig into that well. What you'll probably see a fair bit more of is something like what we did with the Wayfinder's flagship, the Master of Stars. Because we don't have Masters of Swords and Spells, but the idea that, like, they have this ship called the Master of Stars, and if you're a Pathfinder Society person, wow, that makes a lot of sense and is thematically cool. I think you'll see more stuff like that. Rather than just us bringing some elements like that directly whole cloth over. At that point, it really does become Pathfinder in space and the exact same thing, and we don't want that. We want to create some new stuff. However, that being said, there are certain faction elements that we are bringing over, not for Pathfinder Society factions, but like real-world factions. So things, you know, like the Aspis Consortium have shown up, and boy, if you've played some scenarios that involve them, they're kind of radically different in their relationship with the Starfinder Society. And so it's stuff like that when we go that direction. We might turn some stuff on its head and occasionally indulge in some old true tropes. I just am working with a freelancer who sent in their expanded outline for a scenario where we're sure bringing in something from Pathfinder that is in Starfinder, and it will be a lot of the same, like, oh, I know what this is, and I know how we handle this, so.
That sounds either really good or really bad for your players.
Really bad. I'm not even going to try to veil that.
There's so many great things. What if it's Silent Tide with spaceships? That would be great. Or what if it's like the there's that great scenario that just came out in Pathfinder Society with all the scarab stages. What if that comes back? Oh man, Thirsty, that's too tantalizing.
It's just gonna be hordes of monkeys, Alex. It's just gonna be hordes of monkeys.
Well, one scenario.
What if they're all monkeys in spacesuits?
That's not.
I'm sorry.
Fair. one scenario that I will tease because we have a product page for it and everything. It is our scenario that's coming up in February. I want to say it is the Sanctuary of Drowned Delights. I believe that is what we want. The Sanctuary of Drowned Delights, written by Kate Baker, who. She has put together an excellent scenario from everything I've seen. I'm getting the final turnover pretty soon. But we're calling back to an old sort of classic Pathfinder Society scenario, which is the Temple of Imperial Enlightenment. There are some certain shades of that in this scenario. I mean, taking out some questionable things that may have happened in that scenario way back when. But really, sort of thematically, that's what we're going with. And going back to an older question you asked, Param, where we get inspiration, there's a lot of Pathfinder Society scenarios that we can look at and go, what was the theme? Like, what was a very high-level theme for this scenario, and did it play out well with the fans? and then we can run with that. Being able to reference Pathfinder Society scenarios as things the author should get a sense for is really cool. It's something that can help us get authors to know what we want them to strive for when they're working on that.
I do have one quick question about the two scenarios a month starting forward. Originally, with the length of how many scenarios there was going to be in a season, it was almost 2019 for season one to wrap up. Does this mean that the season one will wrap up sooner, or there'll be like a gap, or?
I will say that we will be talking about that at PaizoCon, and that will certainly be one of our topics there, where we're going to address some of that.
We already
and
know.
How that's all gonna work out. Oh, you already know.
No, we already know that there's a gap.
Oh, boo. Oh. Sir, the wordplay.
But you mentioned that the Starfinder Society...
One thing that two shows in common, it's the puns.
There is one thing you said earlier about it. The Starfinder Society had to have room to develop its own identity and its own trends. And you have, there has certainly been some elements probably related to why Bard 23 wants me to get you to sing a single from Strawberry Machine Cake.
Yes. I am afraid I cannot do that because that might be a spoiler. Ooh. For one of our PaizoCon release scenarios, which will be a Strawberry Machine Cake concert.
Oh my goodness. Now,
yeah.
I do recommend that any Starfinder Society player pay strong attention to the continued running theme of our Machine Cake. It has been interesting to see players clamoring and reactions towards this. I almost believe that they are actual Eateros at this point.
Oh, there's been like fan content created. I've seen the Lucas once again has t-shirts. I know that there are some people out there who have put together like album covers. There are some things that just come out of the blue at you. And I mean, I knew people would get a chuckle out of it when Eleanor sent it in her turnover and like, oh yeah, this is staying. This is great. But just the amount of like attention it has gotten has been very satisfying and is one of those things that sets us up as being different. So people often ask, like, how far in advance do you plan things? Well, there were certainly some changes in the road when we saw how popular they were, and the idea that we could release a scenario themed around that at PaizoCon was just too tempting to pass up.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other trends or unique ideas that you seem to find the players of the society latching onto that's unique to Starfinder?
Oh, boy. I would say that one of the ones that we get a lot out of is sort of the conspiracy theories. There was a thread that went up recently that was just sort of compiling all the little lore tidbits and information on what's gone on and what's up with the Scoured Stars and like can we trust guidance and all that sort of stuff that has come together that players have just really dug into. I think our concept of the Scoured Stars and that whole like 80% of the Starfinder Society is just wink gone. That has got a lot of people's attention and it makes people feel like their characters' actions matter, that they aren't like, I sure am a level one person in this sea of seekers. We don't necessarily have that problem. And I think a lot of players and a lot of feedback I've received personally at conventions and whatnot has been really positive for that.
Well, you have to be getting some of the largest pool of player experience and player preference of anybody working on Starfinder. Are there any like trends? I mean, like what characters are being built that you're noticing or how they like to play the game?
It has been interesting. I've seen a pretty big mix of stuff, really. Just because I do not get out and play as much as I should. I'm really bad for that lately because I've been in freelance hell for the last like several months. But I certainly pay attention. I'm online on like the organized play Discord and see a lot of that conversation. I think a lot of people really like Soldiers. A lot of there's that dedicated group out there, and I love them so much. We're like, I don't care what people say. The Solarian is awesome. I am entirely with them, and the Solarian is awesome. I think it's a pretty good mix right now that I've noticed. I've certainly seen some people gravitate towards certain items and pieces of equipment more than I've seen like the character concept. Obviously, one that stands out a lot is we see a lot of icons. There are a lot of people who, because of the same thing like the strawberry machine cake, they want to have their own I'm super cool icon character who is their own pop band. And that's been super fun to see.
In our region, we have a character who is live streaming their adventures and constantly getting Twitch shout outs and having to pause the adventure to acknowledge donations. But moving on.
Way to do it.
Moving on. Okay, so
I saw that, James.
Yeah, I mean, Mitsuki Hane is the number one digital intergalactic idol. I mean, I don't know about any other bands, but...
How has the space combat in society been going over? I mean, that's a whole new system that players are going to have to get their heads around, and it's potentially time-consuming. How is that working with the limited time format?
I think, you know... Of all the systems that have been a learning experience, Starship Combat is probably the system that is the greatest learning experience, especially from the development perspective. It is one of the few elements of the game I really got to sink my teeth into with playtesting prior to release because I was terrified of it. I remember I had friends come over and we sort of did like, let's playtest this encounter and then this encounter so I can get a sense of if it works. And John Compton, once again, was great. He did a round of playtesting and we did some very, very methodical playtests and tweaking of encounters. And then obviously when the game came out, it was getting a lot more feedback. Generally, what we've noticed is, you know, there are some trends. Some of the scenarios, like 1-03, was a bit more problematic because we tried some funky mechanics in that, and maybe we want to steer clear of that for a bit, or keep it to mainly higher level where there's more damage. A lot of the ones where we have a gimmick rather than like a special effect, like one of the quest packs where the gimmick really is, it's injured in the rear, shoot it in the rear. That seemed to work really well, and players could catch on and had something to go with. I think our biggest success, and I want to say sort of a going forward point for us, was the Starship Combat that occurred in 1-04. A lot of people really gave us good feedback because it was a Starship Combat that was a we're going to punch each other with lasers in space, but here's a set of rules that are optional, and here's like several paragraphs on tactics. And especially tactics are very tricky to run Starship Combat because as a GM, I don't know how this should go. And you can probably expect to see some more stuff like that, or lowered CRs just to give people more time. And we're again playing around with that. I'll be very curious to see how December's scenario that comes out that's marked as having a Starship Combat sort of plays out for that.
Good. I've had some people kind of go, I wish there was just like a D10 success roll or like a percent die roll for successive maneuvers while you're GMing starships, just because you're looking over the skills of the ship, where their bononuses go for the mononode, duonode modules. Yeah. And they're just like, well, why can't I just roll a dice and just know this if it works or not?
Yeah, and that is certainly one of those interesting situations where the whole rule set is developed for player use. And because, I mean, if you look at the core rule book, there's already so much content in there, including like rules on like how GMs run it. Space not exist. But I mean, it's something we're learning about too as we carry on with the system. And I think you'll start seeing some different Starship combats. One thing that I'm really excited, and it kind of dovetails into another announcement that came out of the recent blog post we made, is one of our next scenario launches is going to be, once we switch to two scenarios a month, is going to be a new evergreen, a tier 1-4 evergreen, so repeatable. And this one, we are looking at putting a Starship combat in it. One of the things we got from feedback-wise from 01-01, the commencement, we had a vehicular scene that was a bit rules-heavy. Some people said maybe tone back a bit. But we've had a lot of positive reinforcement with Starship combat because it's something we've been continually doing and people are getting used to it. So now we're going to have a repeatable where you can introduce Starship combat to people.
No, I think that's a good idea. Keep using it. And you know what else would be cool? Starship maneuver cards.
Mm-hmm. And for any of our listeners who are curious on how to run Starship combat, go back a couple of episodes and listen to our Starship combat tutorial when we had Jason Sutter on to teach us how it done.
I thought we had Keeley.
Oh yeah, we had Jason Keeley. Sorry.
Yeah, we had Keeley.
My yeah, bad. The party liches Keeley party liches would have won.
Keeley, forgive me. I'm sorry. There's too many Jasons out there.
And I'm sure I confused you with my J name. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Now, Bard Wannabe wants to know, what is Thirsty's favorite creature and why is it the Space Ot Yug?
Oh, gosh, my favorite creature. Oh boy. That's a tough one. It really... give me a sec as I madly open up Alien Archive and remind myself of all the amazing things. Because I'll tell you, it's not Skittermanders. I love Skittermanders, but there's just so much other cool stuff. My inner horror person is like, oh boy, assembly oozes are the most terrifying and awesome thing.
Right? I said that when we reviewed Alien Archive.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Devil dropships.
For sure. I like Kalos too. I really, really like Kalos. I've been including some stuff for them, and you can expect to see some more stuff in Starfinder Society. They're such a cool race. Just the look of them is really elegant. But no, I think going through everything, yeah, it's definitely assembly used. Those things are just creepy.
Yeah, I like them. I'm a big fan of the Kamikaze Devil Ships.
Yeah. So good. They're called an apocalypse when there's like five of them.
That being said, one of the super cool things about going back to my love of the creature creation system for Starfinder Society is we totally can introduce entirely new races and creatures in a Starfinder Society scenario, and people don't have to blink. Like, it's not like if you saw an entirely new race, creature, monster in a Pathfinder Society scenario, it's a bit jarring, and it's also a bit onerous to write because of how the old creature creation systems in Pathfinder really, really work. For Starfinder, it's definitely something we can just be like, we have a cool race idea, bam, in it goes.
And then you can put it as a boon on the Chronicle sheet.
We sure can.
We have Cornflies wants to know, why was Origins chosen for the launch of the interactive special?
Oh, sanity. Entirely for sanity-related reasons. Now, I mean, on one hand, sanity, because then we are not doing everything all at once in our development cycle, because, like, last summer just sort of killed us. I remember John and I would be up until 2 in the morning, chatting while working, because stuff had to get done, developed, edited, like, all that process. So pushing back Starfinder made a lot of sense. Also, Origins has just been a really big and growing convention, and Tanya can speak more to it, but I know Paizo's taking a much more active role in it this year than it has in the past. really on the schedule, it's looking like a bunch of us are going to actually be attending the event. I know I'll be there, which is super awesome because this will be my first Origins that I'll be attending. But it made sense to do a bit of spacing, especially because with PaizoCon, Origins, Gen Con, like doing everything for Gen Con in that space was just killer. So giving Starfinder Society a bit more breathing room really helps space out that load.
Now, for those of our listeners who are wanting to get started in getting into the Starfinder Society, I know that there is sort of developed a sort of like unofficial guidelines on what you want to do when you're building a Pathfinder Society character, and a lot of them is don't ignore the knowledge skills. What advice can you give for players that are wanting to make Starfinder Society characters as opposed to just a traditional Starfinder character?
Follow the rules in the core rule book. It's one of those very interesting differences that we don't have any of those pre-established unofficial rules like by third level thou must fly. We don't have as much of that in Starfinder yet. So really, cliche as it is to say, I think going out of the core rulebook is really a great way to do it right now. And there isn't really a sense of you can go wrong. I mean, sure, if you decide to do like a strength 10, charisma 10 Solarian, yeah, you might struggle a little bit here or there. But I think the idea that if you follow those character creation guidelines, I mean, one thing that I would probably bring up as a good idea would be to maybe diversify in your weapon choice. Make sure you have something that targets EAC. Make sure you have something that targets KAC. Don't put all of your eggs into the biggest, baddest weapon that's, you know, a level above yours and spent all your money. The damage scaling in the game is in such a way that you can often use a weapon of your level or even a level lower and still be doing roughly the same damage.
I mean, getting a fusion on your weapon is always good. I mean, first of all, fusion's really cheap and makes your weapons count as magic.
Yep.
That's about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things you introduced with the Starfinder Society scenario is the infamy system. How has that been going on, and how many infamous, or not how many, but have we been seeing a bit of infamous characters?
So it was an interesting thing. I mean, when we announced it, it caused a bit of a little forum uproar where people like, you're going to incentivize people to be jackals at the table. We've had so many requests in Pathfinder to allow people to play a bit more on the gray side of things. Because there are points where you can be a good person and occasionally do something that's just not cool. And we wanted to have a system for that was just not, you know, alignment to be all end all. Really, one of the big pushes for that was there's no atonement in Starfinder. Like, alignment plays such a secondary role in Starfinder. It currently, as per the core rulebook, factors into a grand total of two things mechanically. I apologize. So, and even those are very, like, distant. They're, you know, like, detections and a character theme. So alignment was something that enforcing it is difficult, because in Pathfinder, yeah, if someone, like, burns down an orphanage, sure, I get an atonement. Yay. In Starfinder, we didn't have that option. And so we started getting to talking about how we wanted it to work, and infamy became something that was... Everyone at the table really liked it, and I believe that was actually one of Tanya's ideas that she brought forward, was the idea that we need to have a system in place and test it out and see how it works. And so with Starfinder, it was a great opportunity. One thing that I will not forget was being at Gen Con, and one of the scenarios, I believe it was 0102, where player came up to me after their game and said, you know, in the end, we all agreed to help so-and-so, but so-and-so had been such a jerk to me the whole scenario, I just shot him in the face. And then the GM was like, infamy, and I won't buy it off. I will wear that point of infamy with pride. Yeah. And like, that type of connection is great. It's a storytelling thing, right? So I think from everything I've heard, it's been really good. We're obviously trying to balance it. We have a couple things here or there where if you have infamy points, you might gain a bonus to your intimidate checks because, yeah, you're kind of infamous for doing not good things. But later on, who knows? We might have things that's like, oh, you have an infamy point? You're not admitted to this club. Or things like that where we can sort of use that as a different mechanic. But it's not something I believe players are going to be, you know, min-maxing their infamy because the penalty for it is very steep. So.
Yeah, I don't think out of our lodge anybody's accumulated any infamy yet after a couple months of scenarios.
Yeah, it seems to be very much a case of I have that one defining cool moment that might come up where, yeah, I'll take the hit and do it. But I don't think people are and that was the concern we saw a lot online was, oh, if you give them a system to game, people will game it. No, generally people are okay.
I believe at my tables, the only reason we don't have a lot of infamy is I'm not awarding infamy for the things they want to do, but are being physically restrained by the rest of the party from doing.
And that is, you know, again, the old law of don't be a jerk. Like,
all right. Okay, so another question from the chat is from Roll for Combat. It has to do with Skittermanders, but it's not getting to play one. They want to know if they're ever going to be able to visit the Skittermander home planet.
I have no further information on Skittermander background, lore, or anything like that at the moment. I will say that their homeworld is part of the Vescarium, and the Vescarium is certainly a locale we would like to explore in the future.
Now, how much of, when you're picking your adventure locations, how much are you balancing exploring the Pact worlds versus going to new and surprising locations?
So I have this lovely workspace Excel document that I have, and so it like talks like month, scenario number, tier, title, goals, what do we want to do? And then one of them is region. And so we keep a real good eye on like, is this in the Pact worlds? Is this in the vast? Vast being kind of a conglomerate of near space and vast. But we're trying to keep it fairly balanced, especially to start. And especially as the Pact worlds book is looking to come out, that's something that you can probably expect to see more and more Pact world stuff as we get closer to that. But overall, we're trying to keep it fairly balanced. There's a certain amount of Star Trek Planet of the Week that people really enjoy of like, let's go out to this whole new place. And it's something that is, again, unique to Starfinder. With Pathfinder, you're sort of stuck in Galarian. And I do not say this in a bad way. I mean, we all love Pathfinder. But it is hard to strike out and have that location that is entirely new without going to somewhere like Arcadia. So with Starfinder, we have that option. And so we're going to take that option to showcase that.
When are we going to go to Heaven in Starfinder?
We just played that, yeah.
Oh, the planes. Oh. But anytime you travel to the vast, you go through a new plane of existence. So really, you're touching heaven every scenario, almost every scenario with Starfinder. Bam! Mind blown. Mic drop. No, not really. Oh. But
you also could be touching Abaddon.
You could.
You don't want Abaddon to touch you back. That is not a good touch.
But I think, you know, first of all, as much as like the John and Linda cackling of they said it couldn't be done, a low tier scenario in heaven. I think for Starfinder we kinda want to reach the point where we have some high level PCs and then maybe take a crack at the planes. I mean, look at how long it took Pathfinder to really start taking a heavy crack at the planes. For us, it's something we are totally cognizant of. I'm a huge planner person. I wrote a bunch of planner stuff. I love the planes, but I feel like going there too fast doesn't do anyone any favors just yet. So it's on the radar, but not immediately.
What if I want to adventure on the sun, Thirsty? Can I do that?
All I'm going to say is December scenario is called the solar sortie. And
no sun then. There's no sun in this
campaign. I mean, the sun might be involved.
I'm gonna go.
Might as well be walking on it.
Yeah. Close. You'll be super close.
Now, at this point in time, I have to imagine that this rapping interview has enthused many of our listeners to go out and get involved in Starfinder Society, but all too tragically, it might not be in their area. Let's say that our listeners want to get Starfinder Society up and going. What should they be doing?
Really, the best place to look into that is Pfizer.com, going into the Organized Play forums, just the Organized Play section on the left-hand side of the website. We now have a fancy new Starfinder Society button that exists there that includes a whole bunch of information on that. One of the sections you'll see in there is coordinators, and that'll give you information on who basically the closest contact you'll have that's part of the countless people who run local events. And so that's where I would start looking. And then even posting on the forums and just saying, I'm looking to get a table in this area. You might be surprised what you find.
If you get to be a coordinator, you also get to be a Diet Pepsi new type.
reaching here, sir. But I also feel like it's time to interrupt the festivities for something else really quick. As we reach the end, I know we've got about 20 minutes or so left, but putting it right at the end means people would skip, and that wouldn't be fair. So let's talk about Skittermander Boons and Goran Boons. I know, fancy. So one of the new initiatives we have to sort of help get organized play out in the media a bit more is we've put together a special promotional boon, which is if you listen to a live stream or a podcast involving any of the organized play team, so right now that would be myself, Tanya, John, and Linda, we offer these special promotional boons, and based on the number of entrants we get, we assign boons to a percentage of those people. So we're going to be doing one of those giveaways right now. So from the date right now, which is December 12th until, let's say, December 31st. So get it in before January 1st. If you email organizedplay@paizo.com, and that's all one word, organizedplay@paizo.com, and include the magic word for the No Direction podcast. Well, the magic term. It's actually two words. You'll want to email with space is the first word. Hats is the second word. Once again, that is space hats. And that will enter you into a chance to win one of the promotional boons, your choice of either a Pathfinder Goran from the new Ultimate Wilderness book or a Starfinder Alien Archive Skittermander. So you too can join the Skittermander herd. All right, my shilling is done.
All right, everybody, you heard that. If you want to do it, get it in. Please flood their email box. Flood it like there is no tomorrow. But
right. Yes, flood the society with my children, the Gorans.
No. Just because you worked on it doesn't mean we have to skew this towards the society, Alex. This is No Direction Beyond, not No Direction
Beyond. Oh, I made one comment. Come on.
Yeah. All right. Milo mentions that he lives 2 hours away from the nearest society gaming place, which is what I would say to you is the online region. There is a lot of online happening with the Starfinder Society and, of course, Pathfinder Society. In fact, you might want to pay attention to our Discord soon if you want to play in maybe a game with one of us. pay attention, and you might be able to play online. But there's definitely a ton of online games. You can get an online game started if you can't find one. It's super easy. There's a lot of resources out there for doing that. Also, if your local gaming store isn't offering Starfinder Society, I find that it's pretty easy to convince a game store, assuming that you have good relations with the game store, to organize play at a location, because that means more sales of product. Because I used to run a game store, and I would cherish every single one of our alpha gamers that brought in all the beta gamers and sold the many, many, many products. Cornflies wants to know if that keyword you just mentioned needs to be in the subject line or the body.
Yes, the subject line and the body for safe measure. I know Tanya has her filter set to grab it. So
you heard it there. The subject line should be that keyword. All right, so we are coming up on time, Thirsty. Is there anything you want to shout out to, like anything that our listeners should be paying attention to?
Well, if listening to me on this podcast hasn't made you sick enough, you're going to get to deal with me for the next 2 months because the next two Adventure Path releases that are coming out from Paizo for Pathfinder are... sadly, both written by me. So you get 2 months of Thurston Hillman coming up. That will be the end of the Runes of Aslant Adventure Path, and then the start of the new War for the Crown Tal'Dor Adventure Path.
That way, when Thirsty one-hit KOs your whole party at the end of one Adventure Path, you could start a new Adventure Path by Thirsty.
And right? Then get KO'd and have to start another Adventure Path by somebody else.
No. At that point, you're just gonna say nuts to these adventure paths and go to Starfinder Society, and that's where I get you.
It's been the plant all along. These weren't conspiracy theories; they're debating. You really are out to get them.
The hand that feeds and smacks.
No, so I just shameless plug of that because that was a good several months of my life that I bled into both of those adventure paths, and seeing them and how they turned out, I'm really excited for them to get into people's hands. I know for Runes of Aslant, there is a Pathfinder Society question that Runes of Aslant 6 answers that has been a mystery since the earliest days of Pathfinder, and was something super cool that I got to pitch in one of our Runes of Aslant discussions, and went through a bunch of iterations and made it into the final text, and oh, so cool. So there's that to look forward to. And then for the crown, for the sort of the Tal'Dor adventure path, my adventure Crownfall sort of starts it off, but has a direct tie-in to an upcoming Pathfinder Society scenario that I am also writing and have been tricked into writing. and so I get to sort of do two sides of an event that happens in the opening adventure for War for the Crown. And one of those sides is what happens at the beginning of the adventure path. And then we sort of have a high level other side of that coin that I'll be writing the Pathfinder side of.
It sounds like they're keeping you very, very busy.
Yes.
And
I'm hoping to take a break after this PFS scenario. I'd like to see my girlfriend again and play video games and paint miniatures. All those nice things.
But didn't you just argue to literally double your workload?
Maybe.
I mean, choose two out of those three.
All right. So if there, the other thing we like to know, sometimes our listeners like to go and meet our guests and Paizo employees and representatives. Are there any conventions that you're going to be attending that players might be able to catch you at?
Oh yeah, a whole bunch upcoming. Kind of upcoming. I will be at PaizoCon, so that will be in a couple. couple months, May, Memorial Day weekend, I believe. So you'll catch me at PaizoCon. I'll be there. I'll be at Origins in June, as per our new announcement. And then once again, I will be showing up at Gen Con. So kind of the three big ones for me right now. There's some other tentative ones that we're still piecing together that I will be in attendance for, but those are sort of the big up-and-coming ones for the convention season.
Mm-hmm. Bar23 asks if you're going to be at the SkullCon in the Twin Cities.
SkullCon in the Twin Cities. Yeah. Yeah, I will very likely be there. It is about an 8-hour drive for me down to Minneapolis and or the Twin Cities. And it is a fantastic convention. And if they're looking for a shameless plug, they got one. It's one of the best conventions I've ever been to. I mean, it takes place in the Fantasy Flight Game Center, and any gaming venue that has beer on tap and little serving discs that buzz when your food is ready, I mean, that's awesome. And the people from the Twin Cities are great and have me as a guest for the last 2 years running. So, yeah, definitely planning on going there too. But I was using Gen Con as my cutoff. Trying to sneak their con in. They're good at it, though.
Alright, so for those of you who want to follow Thirsty, where can they follow your work?
You can follow me at basically on-call GM, all one word. I'll even say hi in the Twitch chat so people can see my name. But on-call GM is basically my handle for any of my semi-professional work. On-callgm.com is where you can find my really now out-of-date website, because like I had time to update it after I got hired. But also, that's where you can find me on Twitter, where I occasionally post stuff. I also have a Facebook page that I update very rarely and should also update better, and on Twitch. And over the next coming weeks, once my freelance load is done, I'm hoping on doing some actual Twitch broadcasts where I sort of I don't know what's the term, scotch and talk, where I have a drink and I'll talk about random topics while playing a video game. There have been a lot of people who've been asking to sort of pick my brain on gaming related things, and I like talking, as you can tell from this show. So
you're good at it.
Yeah, I pretend.
Well, then you have a high bluff score.
People say charisma is a dump stat. That is a lie!
All right, and if you want to follow us here at No Direction Beyond, make sure you visit us at nodirectionpodcast.com. You can also catch us at our facebook.com/nodirection, also on Twitter, which you can get to from our website, because I don't have that address memorized, and I feel terrible about that. Sorry, Lewis, don't hurt me! You can email us at nodirection@hotmail.com. You can also catch us live in the archives here at twitch.tv/nodirection. And you can catch us at youtube.com/nodirectionshow. No Direction Show. It really helps us out if you like, follow, subscribe, whichever the equivalent is, wherever you find us. And we also have, thanks James for posting it up in the chat, our brand new Discord server, which is becoming quite the hopping little chat place. If you want to talk with us and other No Direction fans all through the week, make sure you hop on there. You'll find most of us chatting in there off and on throughout the day. And it's a good way to get in touch with us and get in touch with the fans. And of course, do not forget our fantastic blog content at nodirectionpodcast.com. We not only have some of the very best in Pathfinder and Starfinder content in audio, we also have some of the very best Pathfinders and Star content in text format, with some awesome blogger staff, including both of my co-hosts here also do their regularly scheduled blog. James, you do Code Switch. Alex, you do way too many things for me to mention off here off the cuff.
That's okay.
Nearly every single day, there's brand new content at nodirectionpodcast.com. Also, it would really help us out if you left some good reviews, especially mentioning our brand new Starfinder podcast on iTunes. Anything else anybody wants to shout out to before we sign this thing off? All right. Well, then, thank you very much, Thirsty, for coming on the show. Those of you who Those of you who tried to skip to the end to hear the password, you unfortunately failed. You'll have to go back a little bit and listen to the show to get that
Or a lot of bit, who knows?
Yeah, it's about 45 minutes back.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Listen, thanks. You're just going to need to go see Doc Brown, DeLorean.
Mm-hmm. It's almost as if these things didn't have rewind or fast forward buttons. But moving on. Anyway, until next time, go beyond with no direction.